the top stories, Iran's president says his government is vigorously working to remove sanctions, reiterating that the country's economy will not be tied to it. Israeli forces fatally shoot a Palestinian near the West Bank city of Tul Karm just a day after the killing of a Palestinian man in occupied Al-Quds. Also ahead, Niger says at least 12 soldiers and dozens of, quote, terrorists are killed in a battle in the country's west. Those were the top stories. Welcome. Iran's president defends the draft documents his country has presented in the latest round of talks with the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal. Ebrahim Raisi says Tehran seeks the removal of anti-Iran sanctions imposed by the U.S.
They thought that we are not going to take part in the talks, and they thought that we have nothing to say, that we had no initiative. They thought that we're going to have no initiatives, but it was proven to the world that Iran participated in the talks with dignity and presented two drafts regarding the sanctions and the nuclear issue based on the JCPOA. We will seriously follow up the removal of sanctions, and the nullification of sanctions will be also pursued.
Isfahan, I had a meeting with the farmers in Isfahan.
Raisi was addressing the Iranian nation on national TV. He said his administration will not tie the removal of sanctions to domestic economy. Those sanctions were imposed by the U.S. after it withdrew from the Iranian nuclear deal in 2018. The withdrawal prompted remedial actions by Iran, unhappy with Europe's failure to make up for the U.S. pullout. Tehran and the remaining parties have held seven rounds of talks this year to resolve outstanding issues. During the latest talks that ended Friday, Iran proposed two documents, but the European members, namely Germany, Britain, and France, have said Iran's demands go against the terms of the nuclear deal. The secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council says the current complicated situation in the region is the fallout of the U.S.'s inappropriate and crisis-provoking policies. Ali Shamkhani added, "The condition of Afghanistan today is the result of more than two decades of U.S. occupation and aggression against the country." He made the remarks in a meeting with visiting Vice Chairman of the Security Council of the Kyrgyz Republic, Talatbek Masadikov. Shamkhani stressed the need for peace, stability, and lasting security in Afghanistan, that is, as well as the formation of a broad-based government there. The Kyrgyz official in turn called for the enhancement of economic, political, and security ties with Iran. Masadikov also met with Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdullahian. During the talks, the two officials urged closer ties between the two countries. Israeli forces have shot and killed a Palestinian man at a checkpoint near the occupied West Bank city of Tul Karm. Israeli media claimed the Palestinian was gunned down after he rammed a vehicle into an Israeli guard who was seriously wounded as a result. Palestinian sources have not commented on the story yet. The incident followed another fatal Israeli shooting on Saturday of a young Palestinian man in occupied Al-Quds. Israeli police said he had tried to stab an officer after first wounding a man. The incident drew widespread condemnation from Palestinian officials, the UN, and rights groups. The regime forces have killed many Palestinians, citing similar pretexts in the past. Israel has finally released a Palestinian inmate who was on hunger strike for 131 days in protest at his detention without charge. His release is widely viewed as yet another victory for Palestinians against Israeli regime. Mona Kandil is in West Bank.
After a long hunger strike that lasted for 131 days to protest against his detention without charge or trial, Palestinian prisoner Kaid Al-Fasfus has been finally freed. The Israeli authorities released Al-Fasfus from the Israeli hospital of Barzilai, where he was held for subsequent worsening of his health condition because of his hunger strike. He arrived first at his hometown Doura village in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil. Then he headed to the grave of later President Yasser Arafat in Ramallah. He sent a message to the other prisoners to remain steadfast, reminding them that gaining rights and liberty are only achieved through fighting.
As I did it, my brothers who are on hunger strike will do it. It was not an easy experience at all. Me and the other prisoners went through difficult days and circumstances. We had been beaten, oppressed, and held in solitary confinement, and had been transferred frequently from one prison to another.
Israel arrested Al-Fasfous in October 2020, and it was not his first detention. He was arrested several times in the past, but this time he was held under administrative detention without charge or trial. Last month, the Israeli prison authorities decided to end his administrative detention and release him. The Commission of Detainees and Ex-Detainees Affairs has appraised Al-Fasfous' victory and appraised his encouragement, describing it as defeating the occupation's authorities, and it hoped that the remaining hunger-striking prisoners, on top of them Hisham Abu Hawash, who has been protesting for 111 days, would also achieve victory.
It's a victory for Al-Fasfous and for the prisoners' movement, as well as for all of us. We praise Al-Fasfous's stance. He refused to retreat despite his deteriorating health condition and bravely insisted on his demand.
Administrative detention involves no indictment, no revelation of confidential evidence, and no trial or judgment of the accusations against the prisoner, as Israel holds over 4,500 Palestinian prisoners. Hundreds of them are languishing behind bars without charge or trial under the illegal so-called administrative detention. Kaid Al-Fasfous is free today after achieving a tremendous victory following 131 days of his hunger strike. His battle definitely gives other Palestinian prisoners held under Israel's administrative detention a glimmer of hope to go on with their actions and their fight for justice. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Gunmen killed 12 soldiers in southwestern Niger, the latest militant attack to hit the West African country. Nigerian Defense Ministry says troops at a G5 military base in the Tillaberi region came under attack by dozens of terrorists on Saturday. 8 soldiers were also wounded. The G5 Joint Force is a regional military alliance established in 2017 to bring order to the border areas. The base is located near Niger's borders, that is, with Mali and Burkina Faso. All 3 nations have recently seen a rise in militancy with groups linked to Daesh and Al-Qaeda carrying out regular attacks across the region. Meanwhile, in the Gambia, incumbent President Adama Barrow has been declared winner of Saturday's election. According to the country's Electoral Commission, Barrow received around 53% of votes, outstripping his nearest rival, Osainu Darboe, who garnered about 28%. The announcement sparked celebrations among Barrow's supporters in the capital, Banjul. However, 3 other contenders, including Darboe, have rejected the results. They cite delay in the vote count as well as some problems at polling stations on the election day. Barrow came to power after the ouster of former long-term president Yahya Jammeh, who currently lives in exile after refusing to accept defeat to Barrow in 2016. Demonstrations against the government's imposed coronavirus restrictions turned violent in the Belgian capital, Brussels. Protesters rejected mandatory vaccination and other curbs. Belgium has one of the highest COVID infection rates in Europe. The country has mandated masks for some groups as part of efforts to curb its rising cases. Other European countries struggling with the same problem have also tightened restrictions. Austria is one of them. It became the first country in Western Europe to reimpose a national lockdown last month. On Sunday, its capital, Vienna, saw protests against the restrictions. Similar demonstrations also took place in Denmark, Spain, and the Netherlands. First political rally by a French far-right presidential candidate turns violent near the capital, Paris. Violence erupted after supporters of Éric Zemmour started throwing punches and chairs at an anti-racism group dressed in black with quote-unquote "no to racism" on their shirts. The scuffles reportedly continued outside the venue where Zemmour delivered his first speech since declaring his candidacy for the April election. Meanwhile, hundreds of anti-racism protesters also marched in Paris. Zemmour is facing criticism for his anti-Islam and anti-immigrant views. The 63-year-old, who's been convicted of four inciting racial hatred, is the main challenger to traditional far-right figure Marine Le Pen. Some surveys suggest that the two could eliminate one another by splitting the far-right vote in the first round of the presidential election, most likely against incumbent Emmanuel Macron on April the 10th. The French president's visit to Saudi Arabia and a number of other Persian Gulf Arab states has drawn criticism from rights groups. Emmanuel Macron is accused of rehabilitating Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He's the first Western leader to visit Riyadh since Saudi opposition journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed and dismembered inside the country's Istanbul consulate in 2018.
French President Emmanuel Macron wrapped up his two-day tour of the Persian Gulf after a meeting with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman on Saturday. During Macron's visit to Jeddah, he and the Saudi Crown Prince discussed a whole range of issues, including crisis hit Lebanon. Beirut has been suffering from an economic crisis exacerbated by a diplomatic dispute between Lebanon and some Arab Persian Gulf states, especially Saudi Arabia, which had blocked imports. The rift between Riyadh and Beirut was sparked when former Lebanese information minister George Kardahi criticized the Saudi-led military campaign in Yemen. Macron landed in Jeddah after visiting the United Arab Emirates and Qatar. His visit marked the first meeting of a Western leader with Mohammed bin Salman since the assassination of Saudi opposition journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Saudi Arabia's consulate in Istanbul back in 2018. Evidence gathered by Turkish authorities revealed that a team of Saudi agents subdued, killed, and then dismembered the journalist inside the diplomatic mission. U.S. intelligence services revealed that the gruesome killing of Khashoggi was directly ordered by Mohammed bin Salman. Macron's visit has drawn reactions from human rights groups. They accused the French president of trying to rehabilitate bin Salman. Critics argue that nothing can justify Macron's trip, given Saudi Arabia's human rights violations, such as the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, threatening activists, imprisoning human rights defenders, slaughtering Yemeni civilians, and so forth. Macron has rejected the accusations, claiming that dialogue with Saudi Arabia was necessary to work for stability in the region. However, in a stark contradiction to his assertion, the French president signed a multi-billion dollar military contract on the previous day with the UAE during his visit to the country as part of his tour.
The reality is that France will put money, will put business, will put profits before human rights, before freedom, and before democracy. And the French are very keen to expand their military relationship with Saudi Arabia, partly to increase the amount of revenue they receive from their annual weaponry sales to the kingdom, but also to compete with British military sales to the kingdom.
The UAE plays a prominent role in the Saudi-led war on Yemen that has left hundreds of thousands of Yemenis dead and millions more displaced, in what the UN calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
During his two-day tour of the Persian Gulf, President Emmanuel Macron signed a deal for selling 80 French-made jets to the UAE. The arms sales comes against the backdrop of the UAE and Saudi Arabia sharing the blame for the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Yemen, which is the direct result of years-long war and blockade against the country. Many are wondering if Macron's move legitimizes the war crimes and civilian casualties caused by the massive bombing campaign in Yemen.
During the two-day tour to the Persian Gulf, Macron gave a visit to the UAE and Qatar. In the UAE, he signed a record $15.8 billion contract for selling 80 French Rafale warplanes. Rights bodies slammed the agreement, blaming the UAE for playing a prominent role in the Saudi-led war on Yemen. Signing a major weapons deal with a country involved in the war on Yemen raises speculations as to what exactly Paris is looking for in such trips. Such a sale is especially under the spotlight at a time when France has been deprived of a share in a lucrative security pact among Australia, the UK, and the US.
France is a leading friend and ally to the Saudis. And on top of that, Saudi Arabia is the leading exporter and financier of terrorism in the world. And so, given that France has a strategic partnership with Saudi Arabia, demonstrates that not only is France complicit in terrorism, as is Britain and France, but also Paris has no regard whatsoever for human rights, democracy, or freedom.
Another country that has provided support for the Saudi regime despite its violations of human rights in Yemen is the United States. Last month, the Pentagon announced that the State Department had approved the proposed sale of 280 advanced air-to-air missiles to Saudi Arabia in late October. The deal is valued at up to $650 million. The missile sale followed the U.S. approval of a $500 million helicopter maintenance deal for the kingdom in September. The fact that the U.S. and France are the largest weapons exporters to Saudi Arabia brings one to the conclusion that Washington and Paris are only after selling their military hardware despite the war crimes Riyadh is committing and the irreparable loss of hundreds of thousands of civilian lives and displacement of millions more during the ongoing war on Yemen.
That's it for me.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Human rights groups have criticized French President Emmanuel Macron's meeting with Mohammed bin Salman in Saudi Arabia, a meeting which took place on Saturday, 4th of December. The meeting marked the first one-on-one public meeting of a major Western leader with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia since the state-sponsored assassination of the dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Angelique Chrysaphis and Stephanie Kirschgassner. The piece is titled Emmanuel Macron Accused of Trying to Rehabilitate Mohammed bin Salman. Human rights groups have criticized French President Emmanuel Macron's meeting with Mohammed bin Salman in Saudi Arabia. The meeting took place on Saturday, 4th of December. The meeting marked the first one-on-one public meeting of a major Western leader with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia since the state-sponsored assassination of the dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. For 3 years since the 2018 murder of Khashoggi, Western heads of state have avoided direct one-on-one meetings with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. The US President Joe Biden has even avoided speaking to the future King of Saudi Arabia in what has widely been seen as an attempt to avoid conferring legitimacy on the de facto ruler. But President Macron's move suggests at least one major Western leader is ready to formally re-establish ties to the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia directly, less than a year after U.S. intelligence agencies released a report stating they believed that Mohammed bin Salman had personally approved the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Whatever strategic interest France has in Saudi Arabia, nothing can justify the legitimization of a ruler who kills journalists, threatens activists, imprisons Saudi women and human rights defenders, slaughters Yemeni civilians, and deceives the international community. Emmanuel Macron diminishes himself and his own country as he stoops to partnership with Mohammed bin Salman, said Agnès Callamard, a French national who serves as Amnesty International's Secretary General. After President Macron was accused of attempting to rehabilitate Prince Mohammed bin Salman, his office defended the meeting, telling journalists that Saudi Arabia was a major actor in the region and stressed that France would have a demanding dialogue with the Saudi kingdom. The Elysee Palace in Paris said the meeting in Jeddah was not in any way intended to get the Saudi Crown Prince back in the saddle. Instead, it was part of Emmanuel Macron's long-term strategy since his election for France to contribute to stability in the region, and that the country was presenting itself as a balancing power in reinforcing dialogue between countries from the Mediterranean to the Persian Gulf. Bruce Rydell, a senior fellow at Brookings Intelligence Project who formerly served as an analyst at the CIA with a focus on Saudi Arabia, called the meeting a French seal of approval for Mohammed bin Salman and his war in Yemen. Any semblance of Western disapproval of Saudi behavior in Yemen has now been removed. It is a remarkable statement of French betrayal of the people of Yemen, he said. He pointed to a recent United Nations report that showed nearly 400,000 Yemeni children were at risk of starving to death amid the conflict in Yemen, which Bruce Rydell said was a catastrophe that had largely been put in place by the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. News of Emmanuel Macron's meeting coincided with a new attempt by the Biden administration to reach out to Saudi Arabia, as it has sought to persuade the kingdom to increase oil production. In a statement, the National Security Council revealed that three senior U.S. officials have traveled to the United Arab Emirates, to Saudi Arabia, and to Qatar to discuss economic issues and areas where the United States could, quote, partner to invest in the clean energy future and find ways to further collaborate to build a 21st century clean energy architecture, unquote. The Saudi oil giant Aramco has been considered one of the world's largest contributors of carbon dioxide. U.S. officials said President Biden was not expected to have a conversation with Prince Mohammed bin Salman despite the outreach. The Biden administration's relationship with the kingdom is under close scrutiny in the U.S. Congress, where both Democrats and Republicans alike have expressed deep disapproval of the kingdom and have called for the U.S. to end all arms sales to Saudi Arabia. Human Rights Watch criticized French arms sales to the region and said President Emmanuel Macron must speak out against human rights abuses in Saudi Arabia on his visit to the Persian Gulf, which began on Friday, 3rd of December, and will take Emmanuel Macron to the United Arab Emirates, to Saudi Arabia, and to Qatar. In a statement, Human Rights Watch said Macron should address the atrocious 2018 murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Remaining silent on these matters would be tantamount to turning a blind eye to serious human rights violations.
Food for thought.
Salam, everybody. And how about starting the day by contemplating on a wise statement from the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him. Each step one takes is a step towards one's destiny.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You're welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, today, brothers and sisters, we are going to speak about patience. When it comes to what patience is, of course, patience is the capacity to tolerate pain, difficulties, and hardships in our life. So it's a great gift from Allah. There are fewer people around us who exercise patience and who can be categorized as sabirun, or the ones who observe patience in the face of difficulties, hardships, and vicissitude. Obviously, in Islam, the quality of being patient comes with many benefits and rewards. Patience is an admirable quality which helps us connect with Allah. It is to endure with strength any hardship. Of course, Allah Almighty has promised those who endure hardship and those who are patient tremendous reward and tremendous sawab. Patience is to hold one's soul from being impatient. and displeased, holding the tongue from complaining and the body parts from harming himself or others. Because we see in our day-to-day life there are people who are not patient, so they either start inflicting harm upon themselves or they cause harm upon other people. So it's sometimes forbidden in Islam, you know. For example, if someone's dear and near dies, it's not permissible for him or her to start scratching his or her face, you know, plucking his or her hair. And of course, if a person does this, he has sinned, he has committed a haram act, because it is always necessary to be patient in the face of any disaster, any mishap, any tragedy that takes place in our life. So that's why Allah Almighty has promised that He is with the Sabirun. He is with those who observe patience. And there are many verses in the Quran which shows the virtues and greatness of patience. Now, in the Arabic language, the word sabr is a common word. It is a word which has also been repeatedly mentioned in different verses of the Quran. And it literally means patience. Patience and the word sabr actually, according to Arabic dictionary, means to contain. What to contain? Of course, we have to contain our anger, we have to contain our, emotions and our, sentiments, whatever that takes us out of control. So, as I defined the word patience in the beginning, technically the word patience is the capacity to accept or tolerate problems, to accept and endure suffering without becoming annoyed or anxious. And that's what patience is about. That's what sabr is actually about. Let's have a break. We will be back. Welcome to your program For a Better Life. We are discussing patience. Respected brothers and sisters, patience has great status in the sight of Allah. It is highly encouraged in different, religious sources, the Quran being one of them. And of course, the prophetic tradition is another important source in which you can find the tremendous reward of patience. And patience is considered to be the best of deeds and the best of actions. Allah Almighty has said in the noble Quran, قُلْ يَا عِبَادِيَ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا اتَّقُوا رَبَّكُمْ لِلَّذِينَ أَحْسَنُوا فِي هَذِهِ الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةٌ وَأَرْضُ اللَّهِ وَاسِعَةٌ إِنَّمَا يُوَفَّى الصَّابِرُونَ أَجْرَهُمْ بِغَيْرِ حِسَابٍ. Say, O my servants who have believed, fear your Lord, for those who do good in this world is good. And the earth of Allah is spacious, it is vast. Indeed, the patient will be given their rewards without account. So, the verse explicitly and clearly states that those who are patient, they will receive their full rewards without any hisab, without any limit, without any calculation, and without any estimation, This is what sabr is, and this is how much Islam values sabr, patience. Of course, you can go to the Holy Quran, see chapter 39, verse 10, and you'll find the verse in there. And if you would like, you can also read the commentary of this verse. And this is not the only verse that you can read in the Quran. There are more than 100 verses in the Quran, according to Mufassirin, according to the exegetes of the Quran. There are more than 100 verses which clearly relate to the concept of patience. So we can conclude, not only from this verse, but also from other verses in the Quran, that there is reward only for those among us who are patient. And of course, in this world, we face many challenges, many difficulties, or trials and tribulations, and the sufferings are there.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
What we have to do is to exercise patience. We have to be patient because Allah Almighty loves those who exercise patience in any time and any occasion, because it's not confined to a specific condition. Patience is always recommended, it's always important. Allah is with the sabirin, Allah is with the patient. In Allah ma'as sabirin. There is no doubt as to the fact that calamities do happen in everybody's life. You cannot find anyone on this earth, on this planet, who may have lived without hardship, without difficulty. At one stage of his life or another, he might have suffered pain, misery, adversities, difficulties, vicissitude, trial and tribulation. And obviously, these trials and tribulations are for good, you know. There is a philosophy behind them. Without hardship, without pain, we do not value prosperity, happiness, and ease. It's through those difficulties that we understand the value of hardship, and it's through those challenges that we actually understand the value of ease and comfort and tranquility. Inshallah, you will be patient in your life. Hardships are there, but in Allah ma'as sabirin, Allah is with those who are patient. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
Is it interesting to experience what Harry Potter went through at Hogwarts? Well, it could be, at least for students at a university in Pakistan, kicking off a festival celebrating the fictional wizard. The students at Government College University made their 150-year-old campus look like the magical school created by British author J.K. Rowling. They put on costumes and set up decorations reminiscent of Hogwarts. The university's vice chancellor says the campus, with its vast halls and soaring archways, has always reminded the students of the fictional school.
Most of these youngsters, they grew up at the time when J.K. Rowling's work was being presented in the novels and then later on in the film. So that magical charm, that fantasy, they really enjoyed. They grew up reading that fantasy. And then when they come to Government College University and see these architecture. It reminds me of that Hogwarts that is being filmed in Harry Potter films.
The university official spoke proudly of what his students have done. They were themselves happy too, calling their experience fun. Others said it was unbelievable to be in Hogwarts. The festival also screened Pakistan's first fan-made Harry Potter film made and acted by the students. The Swedish city of Stockholm has launched its 31st annual Christmas competition of baking gingerbread.
There is a limited in space, so it's 40 centimeters by 40 centimeters, and everything you build, all the material need to be eatable. So you can build with different things, gingerbread of course, but also candies and other things, but you need to be able to eat it. So that's one of the rules as well.
Each year, the Gingerbread House competition, hosted by ArcDes Museum of Architecture and Design, has a theme for the designs. This year's theme is Together, attracting various interpretations of the topic. So far, the entries have included the Titanic, the famous coffee shop from the American TV show Friends, an igloo, and the Berlin Wall, all entirely edible. The event, which has been running for 31 years, is designed for all kinds of creators, such as children, young people, adults, amateurs, and professionals. The Tasty exhibition runs until January the 5th. A Palestinian teacher has developed an assistant for himself nicknamed Mr. Robot, bringing joy to the children of a school in Gaza. Mr. Robot teaches the children of Al-Basma School about electric circuits and helps them memorize their lessons. Mr. Robot moves freely in the classroom, speaking Arabic to students and communicating with them as a friend. The teacher creating it says the aim was to stimulate creativity and innovation in his classroom.
Mr. Robot, as his name suggests, is the teacher's assistant and not his replacement. He assists in the education process by asking questions and giving answers, greeting students and interacting with them in all aspects of a class.
The teacher says at first students reacted to it in a strange way, but later on they said it was like a dream come true for them. Local engineers say the robot is the first of its kind in the Gaza Strip, where electrical tools and components are scarce.
Artificial intelligence has found its way into several aspects of our lives. Now, a French research team is working on a project to provide fishermen with intelligent trawls that could help them sort out fishes before they are brought to the boats.
The objective of the project is to try to provide a support tool for fishermen, because at the moment, when they put their fishing gear in the water, a trawl net is like a large net. It is towed behind the vessel for several hours without having knowledge of what enters the trawl net in real time. Namely, is it species that are targeted by the fishermen or not targeted?
The trawl has a camera that can capture footage underwater, which is then analyzed by a microcomputer using artificial intelligence. If targeted fishes are detected, the trawl will switch to fishing mode. But when there are no targeted species, it will switch back to flight mode to avoid having an impact on the seabed. Another feature of this technology is to identify and classify pelagic species. For instance, horse mackerel can be displayed in blue on the screen, while the sardines are shown in pink. If you enjoy nighttime adventures, then this park in Paris is just for you. Decorated with colorful lighting, the venue gives you a real feeling of life-size sculptures depicting dinosaurs and other prehistoric animals. In this exhibition dubbed Evolution on the Path of Lights, visitors can walk through tunnels formed by some of the sculptors. They are made of paper, steel, and lights. More than 100 sculptors light up like lanterns across the park. These include well-known favorites of kids, such as Triceratops, and T-Rex. Some huge lanterns also represent insects and vertebrates that walked on the planet millions of years ago. The exhibition's director says the goal is to raise awareness and educate the public about biodiversity in the past and present.
In Thailand, monkeys climbing on piles of fruits and vegetables in central Thailand is not due to a mess, though. It is actually an annual event called the Monkey Festival in Lopburi Province. The long-tailed monkeys, known as macaques, feast on 2 tons of fruits and vegetables in Lopburi. That is the capital city of the province with the same name. Locals say the event is a symbolic way to thank the cute animals for doing their part in drawing tourists to their town. This year's festival took place after a 2-year halt due to the pandemic.
Today is the 33rd time that we held this event. This year under the theme of Wheelchair Monkey Party, where we organizers will donate 100 wheelchairs to people in need. I would say the event is very successful. Many Thais and tourists are visiting.
Lopburi has been holding the annual festival for its monkey population for decades now. COVID restrictions meant last year's party was missing its usual crowd of spectators. However, this year the humans were back in force with more than 100 turning out to see the monkeys.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Historical monuments have many duplicates made by enthusiasts around the world. India's Taj Mahal is not an exception. But the one you're about to see right now is not just the physical copy. It shares the spirit of Taj Mahal as well. This mini replica is located in the city of Burhanpur, some 800 kilometers away from the magnificent Taj Mahal itself. It has a love story behind it too, just as Taj Mahal does. Anand Prakash Choksi, a teacher, has built this replica as a gift to his spouse. It took Choksi 3 years to build the 4-bedroom house that is decorated by artisans from Agra, where Taj Mahal is located. He says that he has made the replica to show his love and spread the message of peace. Taj Mahal was built by a Mughal Emperor Shah Jahan in memory of his wife Mumtaz Mahal back in the 17th century. Now, for those interested in ancient history, Egypt has unveiled a renovated ancient road dating back some 3,400 years in spectacular nighttime ceremony. This historical corridor is nearly 3 kilometers long and connects the temples of Karnak and Luxor in the center of the southern city of Nile. The stone road, also known as the Avenue of Sphinxes or the Ramsar Road, features over 1,000 traditional sphinxes and ram-headed statues on its sides. The site was buried under layers of sand until it was discovered back in the late 1940s. Since then, the path has undergone decades of excavation efforts, but experts say that many statues have been completely damaged.
Sphinx statues were completely damaged and in very bad condition because wrong restoration works were conducted in the 1960s and 1970s. In the previous century, they used wrong materials for the restorations. Now we're using internationally recognized materials for the restoration works.
Egypt has described the site as the largest open museum in the world. The new attraction aims to help revive the country's tourism history industry. The sector has been hit hard due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
robots now helping as teaching aids in some Korean kindergartens. The pint-sized machines do everything they can, from singing to reciting stories. The robots, being as tall as nearly 25 centimeters, can also dance, have sing songs, and even teach kung fu moves. That gives children fun as they mimic the robots' push-ups and one-legged balances. It's also good for the kids' creativity. In fact, that's the purpose of sending the robots to hundreds of kindergartens in Seoul, beginning from August. Each robot has a camera and its helmet, making it possible to take photos and send them to a tablet for viewing. Teachers say they love their new ways.
The robots are helpful when at times it's hard for me to read everyone's stories. The robots can read out stories in a very entertaining way by switching voices accordingly.
For now, the robots are being used as part of a pilot program, but Korean education officials hope to use them more widely, although they say the machines would not replace teachers. The officials believe having this experience in nursery schools will have a lasting effect throughout the kids' youth and as adults.
Spacecraft are used for a range of purposes, from observation to exploration and navigation. But this specific spacecraft was designed for a totally different purpose, to smash into an asteroid. In a first-of-its-kind mission, NASA launched the vehicle, Dot Dot, from a Space Force base in California. The mission will take 10 months to travel to a pair of asteroids. It will eventually crash into one of two rocks and see if it can change its course. Just before impact, DART will deploy a small satellite to take photos of the crash. Space organizations around the world are eager to find ways of countering objects that might head towards the Earth. The good news, though, is that for now, none of those objects are a threat. Old manuscripts are precious and can sometimes fetch attractive sums of money, but this one has gone far beyond, as it's a really rare handwriting belonging to a world-famous scientist. This manuscript was sold for a whopping $13 million at an auction at Christie's in Paris, but would you still be surprised if we told you that it belongs to no one but the great physicist of our time, Albert Einstein? Einstein did not have a habit of keeping drafts, and this is one of only two manuscripts that have survived. Einstein wrote the 54-page document in the early 1900s in Zurich, Switzerland, and his colleague Michel Besseau has preserved it since then. The document contains Einstein's preparatory work for his signature achievement, the theory of general relativity. Einstein's letters have set records twice before, but for much lower prices. November is the best time of the year to see polar bears moving around Canadian shores. During this month, the carnivores gather in large numbers and wait for the waters to freeze before they begin their seal hunt. These bears are playing and wrestling in the Canadian city of Churchill, dubbed the polar bear capital of the world. The area is located within a natural habitat of a large population of polar bears. Sometimes the city's residents even share those streets with these animals. Currently, there are nearly 25,000 polar bears in the wild, and Canada is home to more than 17,000 of them. However, wildlife organizations say these animals are facing the threat of extinction by the end of the century due to global warming. Qatar
Qatar displays a dazzling drone show as it unveils the countdown clock for the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Doha. The clock in the shape of an hourglass is located at Doha's iconic Cornish fishing spot. The distinctive design enables the structure to be seen from any angle and stand out from the spectacular city skyline behind it. The event reveals to fans worldwide that just 1 year to go to the big kickoff. Famous athletes including David Beckham and Samuel Eto'o were in attendance at the ceremony.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The Chinese President Xi Jinping's exceptional gesture towards the Russian President Vladimir Putin by personally conveying the invitation to the 2022 Winter Olympics in a phone call in August bears testimony to the high quality of the two countries' comprehensive strategic partnership of coordination for a new era. We're prepared for you an article written by M.K. Bhadrakumar, a former Indian diplomat. The piece is titled, Russia-China Poised to Forge a Greater Alliance. The article has been published by the Asia Times Daily. Citing a high-level source, the Chinese newspaper Global Times has disclosed that Beijing had no intention of inviting United States and other Western politicians to the 2022 Winter Olympics, which will take place between 4th and 20th of February 2022. This followed U.S. President Joe Biden's innuendo that he was considering a diplomatic boycott of the Games. The White House apparently sensed that Biden was unlikely to be on Beijing's guest list. Russia's TASS news agency has quoted Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov as saying, after a meeting with his Chinese counterpart Wang Yi in Dushanbe on 16th of September, that President Vladimir Putin had accepted with delight an invitation to the Winter Olympic Games from Chinese President Xi Jinping. Biden waited for two more months to arrive at the conclusion that he's not on Xi Jinping's list of invitees. The Olympic rules stipulate that for politicians to attend the Games, they must first be invited by the host country while the